It's time. It's time to open your eyes. It's time to open your mind. It's time to grow up and face reality. It's time to lock and load because it's Meat Trapper time. Everyone, and welcome to another edition of Meat Trapper Radio. Now, tonight, I'm going to talk about a fairly innocuous subject that may offend a lot of people, and that is the subject of knives. And what I've found is, over time, the subject of knives on the internet is a touchy one, because you have people that are, let's just say, very committed to their ideas about knives, and if you poo-poo any of their ideas, then you have a fight. Very much so like the primitive trap guys. If you remember the dust-up that Clint and I had with some of them a while back, where we basically told them that they were wasting their time playing with picture wire and paracord snares, and oh, the firestorm that generated. People did not like hearing that. But before we get into the subject of knives, which I love knives, I want to talk about them a lot tonight. I wanted to follow up with Clint's most recent rant, the rant about patriotism, because that really hit home for me. And I've had something on my chest that I've wanted to share for quite some time. And I think all of you know how I feel about what's going on in Washington these days. But I want to talk about two sporting leagues, two professional sporting leagues. The first one is the NFL, National Football League. Now, there are Americans who really don't care about the NFL. It really doesn't. It's not on their radar. It's not something that they're concerned with. Then there are people that, you know, they take notice of the NFL and they watch games and they have a favorite team or something like that. And then, of course, you've got the fanatics who, you know, are diehard fans. They paint their faces like their teams. They dress in their team's colors, and they buy season tickets. You know, you get on the internet, and they're defending their team and attacking the other team, and you know, it dominates their life. And you've got all the different teams in the league all over the country, and each team has its own uniform, their own people, their own coach. And, you know, some years, Team A wins the Super Bowl, and then Team B will win the Super Bowl, and sometimes the same team will win the Super Bowl twice in a row. But, you know, it's all part of the game. And the game is a very successful, very rich game. There's a lot of money in this pie. You know, and the players, the people who play the game, are very richly rewarded. They get paid millions and millions of dollars to play football. And you have referees that make a lot of money. You have cameramen that make good money. The people that sell concessions in the stadium make good money. People that sell the jerseys and the memorabilia, the TV networks, the announcers and commentators, all the way up the line, the equipment suppliers, everybody is making money off of the game. Good money. It's a good gig. And at the very top, you have the owners and the commissioner. And you have these guys, the old guys that make the decisions that impact the game. And their number one priority, even more important to them than their own personal profit, is the game must go on. The game is more important than any team. The game is more important than any owner. And the game is certainly more important than any one player. You see, the game has to be protected at all costs. And anything that threatens the game or threatens to harm the game, well, that has to be dealt with. Sort of like Colin Kaepernick. Now, if you don't follow the NFL, Colin Kaepernick was a black quarterback, young black quarterback, who was making millions of dollars a year playing football. And he decided to come out and protest the fact that the United States was a racist nation, a slave nation. You know, the nation that elected a black president twice, and the nation that allows young black men who might otherwise be in prison to make millions of dollars. That's how racist of a nation he lives in. And so he protested by sitting down and not standing for the national anthem. And that protest pissed a lot of people off because it was like the final straw for a lot of people. And all of a sudden, ratings for the NFL started to plummet. And when the ratings plummeted, the money plummeted. And also, there was all of a sudden a racial divide because the black fans of the game largely agreed with Colin Kaepernick, and the white fans of the game largely thought it was hypocritical. And so all of a sudden the game had two threats, a racial divide and a financial threat. And of course, no one player is more important than the game, so the game must be protected at all costs. So today, Colin Kaepernick finds himself unemployed and unemployable by any of the teams. They've all turned their back on him, even though at an individual level, the coaches and the owners of certain teams would give anything to have him as their quarterback right now. But they're willing to lose in order to stay within the confines and the wishes of those who control the game. Because they know, even if they have a losing season, even if they lose, they know which side their bread is buttered on. And they're not going to step outside of the lane because they saw what happened to Colin Kaepernick when he did. The entire league is against him. Every team is against him. Every owner is against him. Just like Donald Trump. If you think about Donald Trump, not only do the Democrats hate his guts, but the Republicans hate his guts as well. You've got the Matt Ryans, or excuse me, the Paul Ryans. You've got John McCain. You've got the homosexual Lindsey Graham. You've got Mitch McConnell. You've got all of these stand-up conservatives who refuse to do anything because they hate his guts. You know, the Republicans voted to repeal Obamacare 65 times when they were in the minority and they knew it would have no effect. But the minute they're in the majority and it's for real, they suddenly vote against repealing it. They love it. Think about that. But it's not just Congress. It's not just the blue team and the red team in this league, the government football league. Not only do both the blue and the red teams hate Trump, but the media hates him. The top generals hate his guts. You see, it came out the other day, Trump was in a meeting with the generals about the war in Afghanistan, and he said, "We've been at war for 16 years and we're losing. If you don't turn it around, I'm going to start firing people." Well, that pissed them off. You don't fire us. We're the experts. And then Trump pissed them off even more when he said, you know, It reminds me of a restaurant in New York City that shut down. They were having problems. And so the restaurant shut down and hired an expensive consultant to come in and tell them what was wrong with their operation and what they needed to change to become successful. And at the end of the year, the consultant came back with one finding. You need a bigger kitchen, improve efficiency in the kitchen. And Trump told the generals, you know, you probably could have gotten more useful information by going to the waiters who just got fired and asking the waiters who used to work there what was wrong and what needed to be changed. Because the actual guys doing the work would probably know more about it than an outside consultant. And that infuriated the generals. The idea that the commander-in-chief might actually go to a junior officer or to somebody with boots-on-the-ground experience and ask their opinion? Oh, that enraged the generals. Because, you see, he's disrupting the league. And that cannot be tolerated. The game must go on. And the survival of the league, the National Government Football League, is more important than any president. It's more important than any congressman. And what you need to understand is when they hate Trump, he's nothing but a metaphor for you. They hate you. You're nothing but a crop that gets picked. Every year at tax time, you get picked. Every time you fill up your tank, you get picked. You buy something at the store, you get picked. You buy a hunting license, you get picked. You buy a boating license, you get picked. You buy a tag for your car, you get picked. And as soon as you get picked, you need to get back out there and get to work and grow some more leaves so they can come back tomorrow and pick you again. And if the crop that they raise so that they can pick and live off of it, if that crop ever turns and threatens them, oh, they'll kill it. Not a problem. You see, the game must go on. And so sometimes the red team wins and sometimes the blue team wins. But regardless of which team wins, the game stays profitable and under control. Think about that. And then you decide who the real enemy is. It has been a long, long, long time since the people of this country have actually governed themselves. For many, 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 many years, it's been nothing but a lie. And so when people wonder why some of us still fly a rebel flag, and we still study old Confederate heroes, there's a reason why. And it's really not that hard to figure out, and it has nothing to do with slaves, and it has nothing to do with people up north. It has nothing to do with north and south, nothing whatsoever.
Skin and run around screaming, we love Satan, we wanna eat babies. I have them on video.
I kill my kids.
Hillary's into creepy, weird, sick stuff, man. Spirit cooking. She sleeps in the same room with a creepy, weirdo woman who's my mother wears a hood over her head. What the hell? The woman number one is ugly. Just imagine how bad she smells, man. I'm told her and Obama just stank. Obama and Hillary both smell like sulfur. My spirit gets close to that evil and I feel it go on.
We don't even notice hell is all rising up against us.
We're sick, self-centered crap. We don't even notice hell is all rising up against us. Millions of born in people of the very worst type, and I'm so pissed. We're gonna stab your daughter at the mall.
We don't even notice hell is all rising up against us.
We're gonna stab your wife, your son.
We don't even notice hell is all rising up against us.
We're gonna stab you with a butcher knife, and then the police chief is gonna say, we love our Somalis, we love our Muslims. Oh, they're so good. Oh, they're so sweet. Yes, we love our Somalis. We love our Muslims. Oh, they're so good. Oh, they're so sweet. We love our Somalis. We love our Muslims. Oh,
now, as
so
most
good.
Of you know, oh, I sell a skinning knife that I designed and that Mr. Mark Hatchett here in Alabama makes. But I'm not going to talk about my knife tonight. I'm going to talk about knives in general and some of the lessons that I've learned about using knives over the course of my life. Now, I have friends who collect guns, who love guns. Got a buddy of mine, just visited with him. He's got 12 AR-15s in his safe. He's probably got 40, 45 handguns. As far as ammunition, tens of thousands of rounds, okay? He's into guns. I'm into knives. To me, a firearm is almost a cold, machined item, whereas a knife, especially a knife made by hand, is something that has a character all its own. It has characteristics that distinguish it from all others. It's not just something that's stamped out by a machine. It's something that was created by a human being. And when I get on the internet, I start reading about knives. The arguments, and especially the gurus, the guys that are just, they're metallurgical experts, and you know, I mean, some of these guys, they ought to work for NASA. They know so much about knife materials and this steel. And so what I'm going to tell you is what I've learned the hard way. Now, the first thing that most people talk about when they decide what's a good knife, well, they talk about different steels. You've got 1095 carbon steel. You've got stainless steels. You've got D2. You've got the steel my knife's made out of, 52-100. You've got 440C. You've got 154CM. You've got S30V, S60V. You've got all of these steels, and the guys get on the internet and they talk for hours about, well, this has got the edge holding and the retention and the carbides and the granular structure of the steel. And I mean, if you read enough, you have no idea what the best steel is. And there's a reason for that, and that's because there is no such thing as a best steel. What I look for is not a particular steel. It's not, oh, I love 52-100, or I love 1095, or I hate 440C, or nothing like that. Every steel has characteristics, and when a man starts working with a particular steel, it takes him years to learn how to master that steel. He has to know the characteristics of that steel. He has to know how to heat treat it. He has to know how to harden the steel. He has to know how to grind the steel. It goes on and on and on and on. And all of this knowledge comes down to a man's experience. For instance, the gentleman that makes my knives, he uses 52-100. That's what he knows. He knows how to heat treat it. He knows exactly what that steel will do under all these different treatments and conditions. And he has learned how to work with that material and get the most from it. Now, being a master knife maker, he could go and all of a sudden switch to 440C or D2 or something, and he could make a good knife, but he's not going to have the decades of experience of knowing everything about that steel like he does with 52-100. Another knife maker that I love his work, Joe Calton out in Wyoming, great guy, makes great knives. I love his knives. He works primarily with 440C and 1095. Those are his two steels. He knows, and you know, talking to these guys, it's amazing the years they spend and the notes they take where they take a steel and they'll heat treat it a certain way and quench it a certain way, and then they destroy the blade and they repeat it and they change it and repeat it and change it. And it's just amazing what they accumulate, the knowledge they accumulate. And so really, the takeaway is I don't really care whether a knife is made out of 1095 or 440C or D2 or 52-100. To me, it's does the person making the knife work with that steel, and do they understand that steel, and have they mastered that steel? That's what's important. And so when you get on these knife forums and people are talking all of this stuff about edge retention and this and that and the other, I don't give a crap about that. Okay? Now, the next thing that I look for is blade or stock thickness. When I'm designing a flesh-cutting knife, I want a thin knife, thin stock, very thin. Think of a fillet knife. When you go to fillet a fish, there are very few animals that have the texture of fish flesh, okay? That's why your fillet knife is so thin. It slices right through this very, I guess you'd call it mushy flesh that you have on some fish. Now, then again, once you have that fillet knife, you don't really want to turn around and use it to whittle tent pegs, and you certainly don't want to use a fillet knife to chop down trees and build a log cabin and make cool survival videos on the internet. But you get the idea. When you're cutting meat, I want a thin blade. That's why on my skinning knife, the Meat Trapper Skinner, it's a very thin blade. And it's distal forged so that it tapers forward and backward and all that. I don't want to get into all that. But in other words, I'm not going to go get an Essie knife and use it as a skinning knife. I've tried it. It does a horrible, crappy job. And that pisses everybody off. I did a video on my channel where I tested the Bark River Canadian, and I tested it head-to-head, skinning a beaver, with the knives of Alaska Yukon. And it was, the results were stunning, because the Bark River sliced meat for crap. It sucked. And it's because it's got a convex grind, and the stock is too thick. But the hate I got on that video, you know, I don't know how to sharpen a knife. And the funny thing is, I tested both knives right out of the box, head to head, factory edges on them to eliminate any sharpening variables or anything like that. You know, but it was, I don't know how to sharpen a knife. I don't know how to skin animals. You name it, you know, there were excuses. But the bottom line is the Knives of Alaska is thinner stock than the Bark River, and it cut better through flesh. And then I showed cutting wood, and the Bark River ran circles around the Knives of Alaska when it came to cutting wood. And it's because, once again, it was a thicker stock and had a convex edge on it, and it was, you know, it was doing what it was designed to do. And so it wasn't the fact that Bark River is a bad knife. Bark River makes a great knife. But I don't think they make a good skinning knife at all. And it's because most of the people that buy them are buying them because they watched YouTube videos of people hacking through limbs and batoning firewood, and none of them ever showed them skinning nutria or squirrels or beavers or coyotes. So after the heat treatment of the steel and the maker's skill with the steel, the second factor I look at is the stock thickness, the thickness of the blade, given what I want to use the knife for. And if I'm skinning, I want a thin blade. And it's hard to find a thin blade because there's so many jackasses out there that get on YouTube and go start pounding their knife through stumps of mesquite. And if the thing breaks, then the knife maker looks terrible and business goes down the toilet because he made a knife that sucks. His knife broke. And so they make these knives as thick as pry bars to stand up to all these torture tests by these idiots on YouTube. And then when you get the knife, you can't skin anything with it. But I don't want to start ranting about that. So after looking at a thin knife, then we get to something a little more subjective, and that's the grind. And basically, you know, I'm going to oversimplify here, but there are three major grinds that you'll run into on a knife out there. And one is a hollow grind. And that's where the knife is sort of hollowed out and it gets real thin down at the bottom. Then you have a flat grind where the knife is the same width at the top as it is all the way towards the bottom until you get to the very edge. And then there's the convex grind, which is a heavy duty edge and it's sort of rounded. And that's what Bark River, among others, puts on their knives. I think Fall Niven puts the grind on their knives, the convex grind. But in my opinion, the grind is important. I do not like convex grinds on knives designed to cut meat. It's a very beefy, very thick grind all the way to the bottom, and to me it's best for hard materials. It's great for wood, but meat, not so much. So that leaves the flat grind and the hollow grind, and I love both of those. And the hollow grind, especially if you have a thicker blade, the hollow grind really becomes important. And if you were smart enough to start off with a thin stock, you can get by with a flat grind without much of a penalty, if any. I'll talk, once again, I'm not trying to push my knives. I'll talk about a knife that I bought from Joe Calton out in Wyoming. And it's a little paring knife, and it's a little $50, $60 paring knife. And it's just a basic paring knife that has a flat grind on it. And I use that knife for everything. It cuts like crazy. And it's because, and it's made out of 440C. But it's thin stock, it's got a flat grind, and he knows what he's doing, and it's just a knife that cuts. Now, I wouldn't want to go out and whittle wood with it, but for cutting meat, it does good. And so those are the factors that I look at when choosing a knife. And in my experience of skinning animals for four decades, that's what I've come to appreciate. Does the man know his steel and know the heat treatment? That's number one. Heat treatment, proper heat treatment of the steel. Number two, the thickness of the stock. And number three, does it have the proper grind? You don't want a Scandi grind for your deer knife. okay? But you don't want a hollow ground knife to go out and build log cabins with. And other than that, I'm open. One last thing, I guess, is handles. That's another thing that drives me nuts. And those of you that have purchased a meat trapper skinner, the first thing you noticed when you held it in your hand was the handle and how it fit the hand and how it filled the hand. There's nothing worse than this stupid flat or skeletonized handles that they're putting on all this crap. The handle is important. You have an edged weapon in your hand. If it slips, it's designed to slice you open. You need a good handle on it. Period. A good handle. A thick handle. One that when you pick it up, it feels your hand, and when you're using it and twisting it, it's not going to slip or rotate in your hand. You look at some of the Scandinavian knives, and they have basically what I call a barrel handle, where the handle is almost a round tube because it fits in your hand, round like a PVC pipe. I'll take that over a skeleton handle any day of the week. But you got all these cool tactical knives, man, that, you know, have to have the hollow handles. And, you know, for an extra charge, we can sell you some bolt-on micarta slabs. See, they don't even call it a handle. They call it a slab because it's not even curved. It's just a flat slab that bolts onto the knife. I don't need that. In fact, on my Knives of Alaska Yukon, I love that little knife, man. It's a great factory knife. If I could make one change, I would have it rehandled with a nice desert ironwood or cocobolo handle. But it's hard to find somebody that'll rehandle a knife for you that is good. All the makers are busy making knives, and nobody seems to want to get into rehandling. But one last thought, and this is something that I have tried to convey to people. I love wood handles. I love natural handles, bone, antler, armadillo shell, wood. I like those over micarta. Now, micarta is tough. It doesn't shift. Micarta is indestructible, and it will last. It doesn't stain. It doesn't move over time. But I don't know. Just for me, when I pick up a knife, if it's got a wood handle or an animal-based product handle, it's like it puts me in contact with nature. It takes me back to the days when knives were made out of natural materials. But that's just me. So anyway, I hope this has been thought-provoking and, you know, I'm sure some of you disagree with me, and that's fine. I would love to hear your thoughts on the issue. MeatTrapper@gmail.com. I'm always looking for good makers, and I love knives. I love buying them, and I love using them. I do not have a single knife that is a safe queen. There is no knife that I own that doesn't get used to cut animals up or to cut wood or something. I don't believe in that. And, you know, there were guys that thought I was nuts when I took a $600 Randall and started skinning beavers with it. But that's what I bought it for, you know. I had to sell that knife back when my son was young and I needed money. But it was a number 11 Alaskan skinner with antler handle. And, boy, that was a beautiful knife. Beautiful, beautiful knife. What a work of art. You know, so well balanced. So, I mean, you could just tell this knife was done right. One of the old ones, you know. I miss that knife. I wish I still had it. But anyway, thanks for listening, fellas. And we'll see you next time.
My first rifle was a 243. That Papa gave Daddy and Daddy gave to me. And they taught me how to shoot with a steady hand. I guess that's something you don't understand. can pull the shine from a mason jar. Used to go fishing out Pickle Creek Dam, but I guess that's something you don't understand. Grandma's in the kitchen, Papa's done passed on. We'd sit out on the front porch just to pick in on the song. And there's blood on the table, cause we were for what we had. And I was raised in this land. I guess there's something you don't understand. And I still fly that southern flag, whistling Dixie loud enough to brag. And I know all the words, simple man. I guess that's something you don't understand. Pledge my allegiance the original way. Say Merry Christmas, not Happy Holidays. I can't change my ways, I know who I am. I guess that's something you don't understand. Grandma's in the kitchen, Papa's done passed on. We'd sit out on the front porch just picking on the song.
Put the gun down and come to the door.
Papa gave daddy and daddy gave to me.